Have you ever wondered how to make sense out of your messy life or how to live in peace in the middle of a stressful world? My name is Jamie Norton, and I want to welcome you to the Making Peace and Beyond podcast. In almost 50 years as a counselor, I have seen a lot of life happen, and this podcast is going to cover all of it. So thanks for joining us while we explore life's struggles and how to live in the peace, joy, and freedom that Christ died to give us.
I'm so glad to have you here. Today I'm talking with Danny DiNardo, and I'm excited because we are all human beings who are haven't changed much through the centuries. We're all born with the same needs and desires and limits, and yet we are born into different stories. And I think sometimes we don't cross-fertilize very well. So today, it's the old meeting the young. So Danny, I just want to welcome you.
Thank you,
Danny,
Jamie.
Is a resident here, but I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about himself. And then we're going to just explore the differences in the story we were born into and how that has affected who we are as human beings and how we see the world. And it's just fun to me to think about doing that. So, Danny,
thanks, Jamie. I'm so excited. I'm going to be on this podcast with you. I love you. I'm so excited for this. I'm 21. I've been attending Grace for just over a year and a half now. That's when I really got saved, or re-saved, I should say, rededicate my life to Christ. I gave up the police academy just about a year ago to follow God's calling into ministry. So the end goal is to be a youth pastor. I grew up in a Christian household, but I never really knew what it was like to have a relationship with God. I went to Lutheran schools my entire life, from preschool all the way till I graduated high school. But I was learning a lot about God, but I didn't learn how to have a relationship with God.
Which is really interesting because I think that part of our history is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
You know, I think I did have a relationship with Christ as a little girl, but I felt very alone in it because the church I went to was very mechanical in some ways. Mm. We went to church, but we didn't bring Jesus home a lot. But I thought something's missing in here because this is how I see it, and I thought I was an alien or something. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, actually, when you say that, a memory comes to mind. My dad has multiple sclerosis. And like we would go to church every Sunday. And I remember every time before he would take his medication, we would pray for him. And I feel like that's maybe the most of Jesus that I saw in my household when I was very young. It was from when I was 8 all the way up to, he still has it, but I was eight when he was diagnosed with it. Mm. Like that's the most I remember, like Jesus in our household was, hey, let's pray for dad as he takes this medication for healing. And that prayer was never answered. But in a different way, looking back on it, it's been a different type of answer, like with medical stuff, like his medications, his healing process. Like, so we are, as I look back, like I used to think like, man, like how come Jesus isn't healing him? But now I look like he's healed him, but in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's one of the things that took me out of church was my parents were both alcoholic. And I thought, okay, what Sunday school is telling me, because my grandfather built the church we went to. I told you, but you know, we thought that the Lord's Prayer with our Father who art in heaven, hallowed is thy name, because it had, you know, my name on the door, my name on the bulletin, my name's everywhere. So me and God had a real relationship in this, and it was our house. And so, but I thought, if I just pray hard enough and I'm good enough, then God will fix my family. And so I did the Girl Scouts, and I went to see the old people and ate milk and cookies and listened to them and visited, did straight A student in school, 12 years perfect attendance at Sunday school, prayed, and God did not heal my parents. It got worse. Mm. And finally, I just thought, God, you don't exist, or you don't love me, or you're just impotent. But at any rate, I started to move away from Jesus that I knew. You never completely did that, I think.
Yeah, I was always surrounded by like learning about God, you know, like there was so much I'd learn about like the New Testament, the letters that Paul wrote, end times. Like I'd be learning so much in Old Testament, but it's like I never truly learned how to apply any of that to my life. Like I think of like, you know, the church I grew up at, they would like, I think use this as an example, like they would teach on the parable of the lost son, but like never would they say, hey, like you're that son. Mm. And God is the father running towards you with open arms when you come back to him. They'd just be like, hey, like this is what Jesus says. Like when I came here to Grace, like it realized like, wait, that's me. Like yeah. I didn't know that. Like there's some parts of scripture, like I can apply, like put myself in those shoes. And it was like truly life changing me. I'm like, wait, this is who God is?
I love the line in the parable about the prodigal son, where it says he came to his senses. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming to my senses, you know, when I came back to Christ. But I think that's one of the things in church as I grew up, we didn't talk about how bad we really were. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about the fact that we really needed a Savior, that it was personal. And I hear you, and I think in our church it was more of a like a left-brained teaching. You learned scripture, you learned prayer, you learned program, but you didn't experience God. You didn't have the relationship with God. You didn't have that emotional bond with God that makes life really amazing.
Yeah. Like the way I came back, I love the phrase "come back to your senses." Like the way that I was dating this girl, and a year into a relationship, she was like, "Hey, like you're not bringing God into the relationship." You know, she grew up here at Grace, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll come back to God. I'll have a relationship with God." Like, yeah, I just didn't want to break
I'm
up.
I'm Christian.
At that point. Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm Christian. What do you mean? I'm like, yeah, I'll find God. I'll bring him in. I'm like, whatever. Like. I'm like, I believe in God, but I didn't know what the relationship aspect was. I was like, I believed. Isn't that enough?
And then, Satan believes in God.
Yeah. Learned that one very well. And then like 4 months later, like it was like a slow journey. It wasn't like that immediate. I'm back to my senses. It was slow months of just like finding God. Like I'm going to be honest. It was like when that Russia-Ukraine war was like 6 months in and everyone's like, oh my gosh, World War III is about to happen. And I remember I was at work just like reading like news articles and I'm like, oh my gosh, like if I die, am I saved? Mm-hmm. And I got scared. So then I started seeking God out of a fear of like, I don't want to go to hell. And then seeking him out of that fear, it actually turned into love. And I was like, wait, there's a lot of stuff in my life that's messed up. I was like, but God's showing me love through this, mercy through this. And then, so it went from, yeah, I'll find God for you. And then it went from, oh my gosh, I'm scared to go to hell, to, whoa, like God, you're greater than everything that I've experienced, all the partying, all the smoking, the girls, like whatever. And I'm like, it was just amazing. Like that's when I came to my senses.
Yeah, that's what you had to come to your senses about.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how to get knocked over the head. Well. Nope. How to get knocked over the head a couple times.
I think the hard thing that many people come to is that we live in a broken world. Mm. It's hard. It's never going to be a place that is fully happy ever after. Yeah. We don't find happy ever after on this earth. But I think what God promises us is that we don't have to be alone in it. Mm. And that's an incredible kind of a gift. But to really look at how do you do hard? How do you do hard better? You know, there's a coach at Duke that told her basketball team, life's not going to get easy. You just have to learn to do hard better.
Yep. About doing hard better is like, you don't have to do that alone.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this generation that we're in, I hear a lot about like, it's the most anxious, the most lonesome like generation. A lot of that has to do with like social media and stuff, but like, you don't have to do hard by yourself.
Probably the biggest difference. We were alone in a different way. We were alone in that, like, people didn't talk about their faith. I mean, it wasn't a a topic of conversation like I hear sometimes you guys doing. it was a, you didn't talk about problems. We didn't acknowledge the things we needed to be saved from. We didn't acknowledge our true human nature of when you try to one life by yourself, things go bad. But so there was a loneliness because we learned to present well. We learned to dress up well. We had Miss DeBerry's hats, and we had right length of glove, and we learned to smile, and we said, fine, thank you. And we acted like we were okay when we were not okay. Mm-hmm. And some of that hasn't changed, but I think there was, even with our best friends often, we didn't acknowledge the things we were doing that we knew were wrong. I believe God's law is written in our hearts. I believe we innately know when we're out of base. Mm-hmm. But we didn't acknowledge that. We always acted like we were okay. And there's a loneliness in that that just is the worst loneliness of all, because the fear is if somebody really knew who I was, they wouldn't love me. Mm. And I have never met a person who did not want to be loved. That's a normal human desire to want to be connected, to want to be loved. But most people are just terrified to be known. And that is still true. I mean, mm-hmm. that part is still true. But I think what has happened with social media is it's an opportunity to hide more.
Yeah.
Like, as a counselor, I have an upfront seat to a lot of people's lives. And so I know a lot about a lot of folks. And I'll see that same person on Facebook, and it's not the same person that walks in my office. You know, you would never know what they're going through. And there's no real life in media. I mean, in terms of the ongoing human eyeball kind of thing. And so there's this distance even more between presentation and who you truly are.
Yeah.
Is possible.
Oh yeah. It's so easy to hide behind a screen. Like I just bring back memories like when I would be like, I don't want to talk to anyone. In the middle of a lunch table in school, I would just go on my phone and just hide behind people like, hey, you want to talk? I'm like, no. Like, I don't feel like talking. I just doom scroll through Instagram or Snap or like go through Snapchat, like whatever it was. Like, I would just hide behind a screen, or like my friends would be like, hey, do you want to go out? I'm like, no. And I'll just sit on my phone on the couch, or I just go upstairs in my room, distance myself from my family just to doom scroll. And like, there's also two sides of social media. I also feel like there's a FOMO of social media, like the fear of missing out. Like, there's the one side that's like, you know what? I'm just going to like isolate myself. I'm going to do hard by myself. I'm just going to drown myself in social media to get away from whatever I'm feeling right now. And then I think there's the other side where people scroll and they see so much of other people's lives that they start comparing. And then all of a sudden they want to live that lifestyle. Like I like me too. Like, I'd see people posting pictures of them at a party, or you'd see someone jumping passed out in a bush. Like, it's a bunch of stupid
stuff.
We're
having fun now.
Yeah, they were having fun, I guess. And I'd see stuff like that and be like, man, that's so much fun. I want to do that. And then I started trying to apply some of that in my life. I'm like, man, if they're having fun doing this stuff, I must have fun doing stuff like this.
Yeah, yeah. It can take you in a really wrong direction, or it can take you in a really right direction. I think social media is amazing in terms of what it offers us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we obviously like social media to some extent because now we are on it.
Yeah, shout out social media right
please
now.
Please watch. It's like, but I mean, we can get answers to things. There's a lot of informational kinds of things. There's you can also really learn a lot about who God is. You can learn a lot about what life is really about. You can learn to do stuff.
Yeah.
I have a friend who can do most anything. She's totally redoing her whole house, but she's learning it off of media.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, I mean, that's so cool.
She just looks, this is how you do that. And then she does it. And I'm not that brave. and I'm
me
not
neither.
That good at social media. But I think there's some amazing things, but like everything else, we have taken a good thing and made it into a supreme thing in mm-hmm. many cases, but it's hurting us in mm-hmm. so many other ways, because we aren't required to have that lunch with the people at the table. You
yeah.
can hide and feel this counterfeit not aloneness. You know, you mm-hmm. can a counterfeit connection, but it doesn't play out in real life. I mean, you cannot play ball with your cell phone, you know? I mean,
yeah. It is. And like you said, social media is a thing. like there's so much, like golf is a thing.
You can't play golf with your
You can't play golf with your phone. Pickleball is a thing. You can't play pickleball with your phone.
You can now do it virtually though. I mean, you can.
Are you serious? Where are you playing pickleball?
I don't know, but I know you can play golf virtually.
Yeah, that's fun though.
Yeah, but there is a fun to it, but it's not as fun as talking about what, didn't we have fun today?
Yeah.
You can't do that with your cell phone.
You can't, and like, it's a thing. It's just like how you mm-hmm. use it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, personally, I don't have social media on my phone. It was too much of a distraction for me. It was a distraction from God. It was a distraction from my schoolwork, from other people. And I was just like, I can't, you know, I'll wake up at 9 and I'll sit on my phone until 11 o'clock, 12 to scrolling through TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, there goes 2-3 hours of my day just sitting on TikTok. Like, that's, for me, that wasn't healthy. And I couldn't be doing that. But it's like, if you can, if you're fine with social media and you're like, hey, it's not a distraction, I can be on it, go for it.
That was probably the biggest difference between your world and my world, is my world was so small because we had no screens. I mean, you can't even imagine this world. I know that. But I think we got our first television when I was 11.
Oh, wow.
To contact somebody on the phone, we had to call the switchboard. And
I don't even know what a switchboard is.
They're one of those things you plug things in. Oh. You plug this in and you plug that in. There's a person doing it. We had party lines. I mean, there was a whole different understanding. But so we didn't know a lot about the outside world except what we read in the paper or the books we read. I read all the time. I mean, I probably got lost like a lot of people now in screens do. And I got lost in books. Mm. And still love to read. I mean, reading is a great companion. But it was the world, because of that, was very small. We didn't know a lot. I mean, the Vietnam War was the first time that a live war was on television. Mm. I mean, you never saw a war, you know, except in movies.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was such a difference in the way we understood things and how, and some of it was like, I remember when I went to Seattle, there was a different culture and a different way of living, and I was just totally lost. It was like going to a foreign country, you know, because there was just this way we did things. And in many ways, the world felt a lot safer. I mean, mm-hmm. we never locked doors. We rode bicycles everywhere. We just went out in the morning and came in at night, you know, sometimes for lunch. And we played with each other. We built things. We created things because it wasn't already created for us. Mm. So we could make stuff. I built, I don't even know how many tree houses and things that we did.
Sounds awesome.
It was fun. I mean, my father owned some property, and there was a sort of a ledge, and there was a vine that swung out over the ledge, and we found it. And so we were swinging out over the ledge until I told my father, and it was gone the next time I went. It was like, because he didn't want it to break or whatever. But we didn't sit much. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, we weren't as sedentary. It's sad to me when I go and see people eating together, but they're both on their phones because they're not connected.
Yeah.
And I think that's the downside. But there's so much more information. I think one of the other things that has happened is the ability to ponder. Mm. You know, there's information coming in so fast that our brain structure is actually changing. You know, it's constantly on, constantly hyper, because it's click, 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 click. And there was a time when we were there that I was thinking this morning, because I walk in the mornings, and I used to love to just look for four-leaf clovers or make clover chains or look at the clouds being formed in animals and just to really ponder creation, to really ponder the last book you read or what was said to you last. And now I think we just run by. Mm-hmm. We have such a surface way of dealing with things. Is what I see a lot. People don't really think.
No, like I would say, like the most memories that I have are without screens. Like I played a majority of my life playing video games with my friends. Yeah, I've had a lot of laughs, but I don't think of those when I think of a good time. I think of the times where I'm with my friends, mm-hmm. having a good conversation, a deep talk, or just there's no phones and we're just having a good time doing whatever.
You know, that's a good point, because you're in your memory. The joy that you experienced was relational. Mm-hmm. It wasn't connected to a screen. It was relational time. Yeah. And we were created for, I told you, we were created out of love, for love, to love, by love. Our assignment here is to love God and love each other. And so when we do that well, when we build each other up, when we enjoy an experience with each other and create a common memory, you know, that is where that joy comes in. I mean, if you look at, you know, joy in the intellectual sense is, you know, God is with you in all situations. You know, that is intellectual, but to experience joy is to experience the joy of the Lord, is to experience God smiling at you with a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
I mean, that is to have that relationship with him that you're talking about. You know, and neither one of us, you know, were, I mean, I think I had it. I don't know why I had it when I was a child. I questioned it, doubted it, lost it for many years and got stupid. And did a lot of stupid, just self-destructive things and really thought I had failed God, you know, I flunked God, you know, there's no way he would want me back because 12 years of perfect attendance at Sunday school did not address the fact that we're really sinners and we need a Savior.
You know?
Like, so when I found that out, it was like, oh, you know, I want everybody to know this. There's a way back.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're lost out there doesn't mean there's not a way back. I don't care where you've been or what you've done or what's been done to you. There's a way back. And that's why I think we both love the prodigal son, because we both recognized ourselves as prodigals who needed a way back.
Yeah. Yeah, I never realized how much I needed God until I'm like, whoa, I need God. Like, I cannot do this on my own anymore. Like, there's just been a joy with that. Like, ever since I've come to Grace, like, you know, like, I love the friends that I had, like, in high school. Like, I still have two that are, like, I consider them my brother or sister. And, but, like, even, like, coming here, like, I'm surrounded by a community that is genuinely just, like, encouraging, that's, like, genuinely loving. Like, I remember my friend group in high school, we'd always make fun of each other. And then, like, on that couple occasions, we'd get serious, like, okay, like, hey, like, what's going on? And then we'd be back to making fun of each other. And I'm not saying my friend group here, we don't make fun of each other. Like, we definitely do. But it's not like every line, every time we talk, it's making fun of each other.
And it's not the biting kind of, let me hit your wounded areas. Let me put you down so I can build myself up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a backwards way of doing things. I mean, we've made leadership something that is, it is a, you know, a pyramid pointed up, but we always thought leadership had to do with the responsibility of building others up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a culture that does that here, you know, to encourage, to help people to exercise their giftedness, to celebrate each other's victories, you know, so that there's not this competitive, comparative thing, because in Christ, we're all pretty equal. You know, we're all just human beings trying to get through life at different places in life. You know, we're sharing that journey somehow, and it's hard. But I think that, you know, going back to, you know, the joy of the Lord is spread by seeing each other. I mean, when I see you, I light up because you light up, and we light up with each other, and we share the joy there, because it's so nice to see that twinkle. I love watching the twinkle in people's eyes. I love watching people. It feels so good when you walk in a room and somebody lights up and says, there you are. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
And you can't get that on screens.
No, you can't. You miss out. Like, you can get a text, hey, it's good to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
What is that doing? Like, dude, like, it's so good to see you. Like, how have you been?
Yeah.
Like, seeing that, it's a total different type of, like, feeling you have.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, the wonder of screens is that I have a grandson and a granddaughter, a great-grandson, a great-granddaughter who live in Oregon. And I can see them on screen, and I can, and they can learn to recognize me. They can. I can see what they're doing. I can see how they're growing. There's such a gift, you know. When I was coming along, not only when you were out of sight, out of reach, but you also to even talk to each other costs. I mean, calling somebody costs money. You don't know about this.
I don't know about this. I know international calls. That's it.
No. All the calls, if they were, you know, if they were out of your particular little area,
really?
The calls. I mean, so when I was shipped out to Seattle because I was such a bad girl, then, you know, I could talk to my parents, but we didn't talk long because it was expensive.
Mm.
You know, and it's. It's crazy to think about that. I mean, I got my first cell phone, which was giant, when I was 49 years old. So when you were in a car, you were lost. You didn't know where your kids were all the time. You didn't have trackers.
You didn't have Apple AirTags. You didn't have Find My Phone. You didn't have, hey, send me your location. Just pin me your location right now.
And there's some real benefit in that, especially because If my parents had known where I was, I wouldn't have been there.
What was that like using paper maps? I'd love to know that.
It was, traveling was interesting because you had to have a map. And sometimes the map was old, so the roads weren't still the same. But you would have them in the little side pocket of your car, different maps for different locations. And if you got lost, you had to find a phone booth, which could be interesting because that wasn't just lining the phone booth up this highway. But you'd have to stop and then plot out where you were going, you know, the little roadmap, you know, where it went. And so it was a lot more cumbersome. And one of my favorite things about technology is GPSs. I mean, yep. I have so much more courage now to go places that I don't know how to get there because of technology and how amazing that truly is, you know, to have not only to have it, have the map on the phone tracking me as I go, but also to have it talking to me. So I don't have to stop.
I would get lost. Dude, I still get lost even with my GPS. I don't know what I'd do if I grew up with the paper maps. I'd never go anywhere.
Like, well, most people didn't. True. Well, the other thing is there was not a lot of highways. I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I think I saw my first four-lane highway when I was probably 11 or 12 going to get my braces put on.
Oh, wow.
You know, and it scared me to death. I mean, cars running along beside each other, that was incredibly frightening.
Yeah, I bet. Still is sometimes.
And, you know, we had one movie theater, so that was the screen in town. And every Saturday, we would go to see the movie, and often there would be a serial, like a little 15-minute thing in front of the movie, maybe a 5-minute news forecast of something that may have happened a month ago. But we would get a quarter. One 25-cent would get us in the movie, was 9 cents, popcorn was 10, a drink was 5, and then you had a penny left over for bubble gum. So we could do the whole deal for 25 cents.
You know? Give me like $20 and I got you. Maybe a little bit more.
Inflation has happened.
Yeah, it sucks.
I think my first job when I got out of college as a social worker, I think it was $4,200 annually.
Oh my gosh. That's insane.
When I was in college, we lived on $100 a month. We lived in student housing, paid $33 a month for rent.
Oh, my gosh. Can we bring that back, please?
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
You know, something that you said that stuck out to me when we were talking about grace, you said, like, the leadership and it's a healthy culture. I wish that our culture today, just as society in general, is just as healthy. Like, I'd just love to hear, like, back in your generation, I truly believe today is like a judgmental culture and like a shame culture. And if you aren't fitting in the right way, if you aren't wearing the Jordans, if you don't have this certain like style of clothing, like, then you can't fit in, you can't be accepted. Or if you're not partying, like, you can't, you know, stuff like that. Do you say, like, in your generation, it was the same type of like culture, or do you think it's been gotten better, it's gotten worse?
Like, I think the presentation, the how you look is still kind of was there when I was there. The brands were different. I mean, we had Villagers and Gants and
never heard of that.
No, you haven't. Which all goes to show how important it was. You know, but you know, there was this how you dressed. I remember just thinking, because my family was an old family. My father owned a hosiery mill, and it was his grandfather's. And my great-grandfather was a legislator and a judge during the Civil War, and which was interesting. And but it was there was still groups that were determined. You know, I mean, there was still a strata, and I think all groups stratify. I mean, it's a normal thing when you gather a group of people together, they will sort of layer themselves somehow, you know, and dress is one way of doing that. But But I think what was different in terms of being a person, leadership was responsible. It had a responsibility to support and to take care of. Mm-hmm. And it still wasn't exactly right because there was a servant leadership, at least in the town that I grew up in and the way that I understood leadership. In my family, there was a servant leadership. Like my grandfather, when he built the hosiery mill, it was almost like a fiefdom or something. It was he built houses, he built clinics, he built churches, he built schools. He had a scholarship fund for kids who were bright that couldn't afford to go. Mm. He had profit sharing. So the whole thing was to love and nurture the people that worked for you, but there was still this, I'm not inviting you to dinner, you know, kind of thing. I mean, I'm not, the church we went to was most of the time not the church the people that where the mill went to. I mean, it was, there was a definite segregation. I mean, I grew up in segregation, which was horrible, and we had help in the house, and it was, I mean, if you ever saw the movie The Help or read the book The Help, it was very real. That was my family. It was, and I didn't socialize well. I never could understand that. It's funny, I was telling somebody the other day, I think I've always seen people just as little kids trying to figure it out. I don't care what color you are, how old you are. It's like we're God's kids. And so I just always felt that way and never could see things the way I was taught that I was supposed to see them. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say like we always have the law of God written on our heart. That sounds like Colossians 3. There is no circumcised or uncircumcised, Jew or Gentile, slave or free. Like we're all part of Christ.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like right now.
And there is, you know, just an understanding of the body. Like I do one thing and I do it fairly well, but that's all I do. So I am so grateful for, and I'm just going to take a shout out for Lauren and Davis Evans who do this. I mean, yep. They're the ones who do all the media stuff. They're gifted, talented, committed people who love God and love this ministry. And without them, I would be singing in the wind, you know. And it's their heart and their commitment and their gift that allows us to be here.
Yeah.
When you're part of a body, it's like, when you put it all together, we make life work.
Yeah.
And that's how it's supposed to work, is community. We've lost so much about community. Mm-hmm. And we don't
have community. We have group chats.
That too. And it's sad. I mean, it's like community is scary for some people because to stay close to people, to really do life with people, means they get to see you, warts and all. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do get to know you. It's really hard to hide in a real solid community.
Yeah.
Because all of the needs that you have, which we all have, show up. All of the feelings, we're not always happy, happy, happy if we're really real in community, you know. But it's so nice to be able to cry on somebody's shoulder and not have to do it alone in your bed at night.
Yep.
And, I mean, there's so much good and strength that comes from really having people who know you and love you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, I think back to my days with my, like, old friend group. Like, dude, I could not tell them anything. Like, there'd be the one friend group I'd hang out with, and there's another group I would actually tell some stuff. It's like, I was like, I can't tell one or the other. Like, you know, I can't do the same thing with both. It was always different. I think of the community now. The other day, I was crying on their shoulders. Like, hey, I'm going through some stuff right now. I need you right now. Like, and it's a peace that I've never felt before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was so freeing knowing that God has given me this community. Like, he's put these people in my life for a reason, to hold me, to pray for me, to cry with me, to laugh with me, to just do life with me in general. Like, it's great that you and I are talking about, like, yeah, like, find a community. It's great to have this community. Like, how could one find a community if they struggle finding one?
I think church is the best place. And sometimes some churches are not communities. Some churches are people who go to church. That's the most common thing I hear when I say, "How is your faith?" Like, "I'll go to church." Well, you can go to McDonald's and not be a hamburger. I mean, you can sit in a car and not be a garage and not be a car. But to really find people, Making Peace and Beyond is an incredible way of quickly diving into community. Because have you ever thought, when you're living two lives, you're living your party life, you're living your presentation, professional church life, you know, you don't exist. Mm. I mean, there's no place that you fully exist, because you can't take your church life into your party life and your party life into your church life. So there's this disconnect, and part of you is just scattered all over everywhere. And finding that place where you can be all of yourself. And, you know, in Making Peace and Beyond, it's so funny. During the first weekend, you know, you see a group of people who are sitting there looking around thinking, "How do I get out of here? And why did I agree to come in the first place? And how do I leave gracefully?" And by Sunday, they don't want to go home because they found a safe place. And I think sometimes a safe place begins with a counselor. It begins with a pastor. It begins with a youth group. But finding a safe place so that you and God can figure yourself out, which is what I think our job as the church is to offer people love and a safe place where they can figure out their relationship with God. Because your issues are not between me and you. Your issues are between you and God, ultimately. Mm-hmm. I'm just another creature. You know, I think the one of the sad things we don't do, and why this conversation is so precious, is that we so often do not cross-fertilize generations. Mm. I mean, I'm 80, you're 21. Your world and my world are, you know, we're alike. We are both human beings in need of exactly the same things. Mm. And yet, the world that we have experienced, the expectations of that world are totally different.
Yeah.
And yet, there's a lot of, I say, your world gets all the information. My world has all the wisdom. Because wisdom is like God-tempered knowledge, but that often takes time.
Yep.
I mean, I remember when I was your age, I was like absolutely nuts. I was so idealistic, and I really believed all these things could happen, you know. And my father and I used to get into horrible arguments about, because I was very global. Everybody can be everything. And he was like, "No, they can't." And so after about, you know, 15 minutes of just arguing with each other about the state of the world, we would just agree that we were different, but we loved each other. We'd just go ahead. And I think, but I can glean a lot from you in terms of where things are now, but you can also glean a lot from me about how life works best. Mm-hmm. And we can both glean amazing things from looking at how God says life works best, because He's the oldest of all. And that wisdom that I used to think was a bunch of rules that were going to keep me from doing the things that felt so good actually are a blueprint, you know, for how life works best if you're a human being. Mm. You know, I think the Bible is like the owner's manual. Like, if you get a car, you the owner's manual says don't put sugar in the gas tank. The car won't run well. And you can put sugar in the gas tank.
It won't run well.
And the same thing is true with, like, alcohol and drugs. The same thing is true with sexuality. It's like, okay, you know, you can do all of these things, but life's not going to work well. Mm-hmm. And the owner's manual tells you that, so you don't have to bother to do it. You know, so there is something to be said for really looking at, if you're a human being, God wants you to have what you want.
Yeah.
He wants you to know you're secure. He wants you to know that you're valuable and significant, that you are created in His image, that although you're a broken person born into a broken world, His image is who you were created to be. Mm-hmm. And He wants you to know that you can have the fruit of the Spirit, the love, peace, joy, goodness, patience, loyalty, all that stuff. But this is how you get it. And that's what you're finding.
Yeah, because like you could look like you could like someone could look at the Bible, like non-Christian, be like, this is just a bunch of rules. Like, I don't want to follow a bunch of rules. And it's like, okay, but I bet you're feeling a pit right now that you're trying to fill.
Yeah.
And that's God.
Yeah.
And like he's setting up these quote unquote rules, these guidelines to protect you. And to like, hey, like it's not worth it.
Yeah, you're
I am worth it. Like you're trying to indulge in all of the drinking, the sex, the porn, the drugs to try to fill a void, but you're just making that pit deeper, deeper, and deeper. So I have these guidelines to help you, to save you from that pain and from the regret. Because yeah, in the moment, it's going to be the best thing you're ever doing. But you're going to wake up the next day or two and be like, man, I really did that.
And it is so important to remember that. Somebody said, you're born into this world looking for somebody who's looking for you.
And
you know, we have somebody who's looking for us. And to go there sometimes is gives you a little bit of hope enough to reach out to somebody else. But to reconnect with people from a shame base, you have to look into the eyes of acceptance. And our job as a church is to offer those eyes of acceptance that God offers us.
Yeah.
And to be able to look into the eyes of acceptance births hope.
Mm.
And hope is essential to healing.
Yeah. Like I a couple of weeks ago, I was with the middle schoolers. We were doing discussion questions, and we were talking about confession and finding a community. And one of the girls, she goes, well, what if we get judged? And I was like, okay, if you get judged, I'm sorry that'll happen, but that's not the right group for you.
We judge ourselves. Anything we hide, we've already judged ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can't tell you something I'm doing, I'm already judged by myself.
Mm.
And I assume that then if you know it, you would also judge me too. Because judgment is in the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and the truth is written in our heart.
Yeah.
So at a heart level, when we do something and off the rails, we're going to judge ourselves in a way that says, I can't share that because I it makes me look helpless, inadequate, or bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like judgment from the outside is not what we have to really worry about. It's judgment from the inside that's the problem.
I used to judge myself so much from all my past mistakes. And I remember I was at... I'm a leader at this point for high school, and I'm at a retreat. Like the night was just, it was just powerful. It was a good night. And I remember I went to one of the youth pastors and I just opened up about something I really regret. I had never told anybody, something that was just eating me up. Like something that I was always judging. I just remember I just told him, I was so scared because he'd been my boss.
What have I done?
he's been my boss for a couple weeks. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get kicked out of like residency. I'm going to be done. Like, I can't, but I'm just like, I'm bawling to him. I'm like, I did this and I've never told anyone. And I remember, I'm not going to forget this. He just looked at me. He just said like, dude, you're forgiven from that. And I started crying even more. So I was looking at acceptance and I've never experienced that before.
Yeah.
On that level.
It is such a gift to be able to tell them your worst stuff, and then they just hug you.
You know,
I mean, it's not, and I think that's beginning of the way back. I watch it when I first started doing Making Peace and Beyond. It was, because I tell my story. My story is pretty, I mean, I think God let me do every sin so everybody else would feel comfortable with theirs, you know. It's like,
I love your line. God gave me vigorous training.
My aunt used to say, God must have a big job for you because he sure gave you a rough training program.
I love it when you said that up there.
It's really, but when I first did it, I would see all these people dressed properly with proper smiles, sitting properly. And I thought, I'm going to tell them my story. They're going to leave. But God assigned me to tell my story. And so I tell my story, and they didn't leave. They told their story. I think it's almost like we long to be heard. We long for our story to be heard and to be still able to stay and be accepted. And when that happens, then there's a beginning of a strength that you're talking about. You know, like I can join the human race. I can contribute. I think one sad thing that we do sometimes is we make people projects. You know, as a church. I mean, I've been in churches. I spent some time in an unwed mother's home, and we would have this group of people who came in, but they didn't connect with us. It was like they were treating us as less than, and I hated it. But there was a corner cook who was wonderful. And she just gave me Boston cream pie and talked to me from an equal level. And I think that was more help than anybody ever gave. But I think people aren't projects. And so, and I love 12-step programs because 12-step programs expect you to give it back. Okay, you've been out, you've been lost, you've been found. Your job is to heal, but to help others find the way back. It is not to just rest on your laurels. It is not to see other people as less than. It is not to forget that you're also a sinful person. But it's to say there's a way back for you to be fully restored as a human being and use your gifts to serve others.
Yeah, like I heard a pastor say this a couple months ago, that God turns our mess into a message.
Exactly.
And I love that. I was just like, man, like I share that with the youth group. Like, guys, God turns our mess into a message, man. Like, it's that like hope, like when there's somebody, and I've been here, so that's why I can speak from personal experience, like someone that's just stuck in a sin or just stuck in something. They're just in a cycle and they're like, man, like this God thing might not be working. Like, maybe there's something wrong with me. Like, I just can't get out of this. Like, I'm lost. I'm hopeless. But then they're sitting across from somebody hearing a similar story, and they're like, I overcame this with God. This is what God did in my life. Here's how he helped me. And like a light can like switch on. Like, it's like light at the end of the tunnel. And it's like that hope, that ignite just comes back. Like, wait, God did this for you. I know you're not the only person he's done this for. There's more people out there he's helped. I'm not lost.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about how pride it is to think that you're the only one who ever did anything.
Yeah. Yep. And it's easy to tell yourself that. Oh my gosh, I'm the only one that's ever done this.
I mean, we're pretty limited creatures, actually. There's only so much wrong stuff we can do.
Yeah, really. Yeah. You're probably the trillionth person to do something wrong.
Exactly. I mean, you put a room of 15 people together and there's somebody that has everything you've ever done in it. Yep. You know, I mean, maybe not all of it, maybe a different constellation, maybe a different look, but there's only really so much we can do wrong. I mean, we all do it. I mean, the whole idea that nobody does it. I think one of the big reasons people don't share their story, though, is because they're protecting somebody else's story. I mean, we had such a strong no-talk rule in our family. You don't talk about the alcoholism. You don't talk about the raging. You don't talk about the abuse. You don't talk about the things that really have hurt you in this world, you know, because it points to us. I remember going to talk to my pastor once, and I came home, and my mother was like, What'd you say? Did you talk about me? Did you say anything about me? you know, wow. And that no-talk rule can go on for generations. And I think the thing that, because my daughter speaks a lot, and she's amazing. She's absolutely amazing. But she'll talk about the marijuana smoke coming out of the minivan and the funny sugar cubes and all the craziness of her childhood. And sometimes people say, does that not bother you? And I'm like, no, that's who I was. It's not who I am. I believe totally, and we believe in the healing power of Jesus Christ, and we don't walk in guilt and shame over stuff that he's already taken away, you know. But something I'm very grateful for is that my daughter is comfortable to get on a stage and tell her story without having to protect mine. Because that's the biggest reason people don't get help. Is they're afraid to, if I tell them that about the abuse I'm going through in my marriage, if I tell them that about my parents, if I tell them that about my child, then they'll think less of them.
I think of 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the old is gone, the new is here. And so, like, when I tell my story, like, I'm not glorifying my sin.
No.
I'm glorifying what God did despite my sin.
Yeah. And the truth is where healing happens. Mm-hmm. You cannot heal in a lie because God is truth. And so he cannot enter a lie. Mm-hmm. So we look like Swiss cheese. We got some real solid truth in there, but then we got holes in it where we're, you know, we have a saying that you're as sick as the secrets you keep. Mm-hmm. And that is the things that we still feel ashamed of. So we still don't share, or somebody else's shame we're still carrying.
Yeah.
You know, so it really is a very difficult thing because it feels like betrayal. Yeah. It feels like I'm betraying those people. And I have a saying that it does not matter if St. Peter hits you with a car, you are still dead. I mean, you have a right to your pain and you have to deal with your pain and not pretend your leg isn't cut off, you know, you know, because it's going to affect how you live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd say, like, even with like confessing, like, you know, like, you don't have to tell every single person you meet your story. But, like, if you even just tell three people, one person, like, confession brings healing. Confession sets you free. Like, just, like, getting it off your chest for that first time is, like, it may be emotional and may be painful even doing it. But, like, the after effects is, like, I just shared the story that God has redeemed me from.
Like, yeah, it is that you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. I mean, that is so true. You know, I'm jealous of you in a way. I mean, I have to, you know, because I was 35 before I even came back and you're 21, and I love talking to you, and I'm so glad that we get to do this. I think we could probably talk for another 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
We may have to do it again sometime.
I have to.
but anyway, thank you so much for
being
here.
Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please like and subscribe. Leave a review, tell your friends, and join us on all of our social media channels. Thanks again, and God bless you.